My name's Bernadette Russell. Welcome to How to Be Hopeful, my podcast all about hope, how to find it and how to keep hold of it once you've found it. The podcast is a chance for me to have a chat with some people that I didn't get a chance to talk to whilst I was writing my book of the same name, or some people that I wanted to revisit and just have a bit more of a natter with about hope and all associated subjects. This week, I was very pleased to be able to spend a little bit of time with a dear friend of mine who you'll be hearing from shortly. We covered a lot of different areas, including journalism, ambitions and hopes that you have when you're young and how you might realise them, and kindness and all sorts of other good stuff in between. I hope you enjoy.
I'm Debbie Marco. I'm a freelance journalist and I write for magazines and newspapers, and I also write some gift style books with lots of uplifting and hopefully hopeful messages for people.
I'm looking forward to talking about those because I love your most recent one. That's a really lovely theme. Just before we start, as you all know, because I sent some sort of talking points over, I like to ask people if anything in the last 7 days, the last week or so, has made them feel hopeful. Now, I don't feel obliged. If there's nothing, you don't have to make it up. But I just wondered if there has been anything that's made you feel hopeful, and if there has been, and what that was and why.
Well, it's kind of a hopeful by proxy, in that me and my husband have been trying to help out with a sort of local charity helping out refugees who have come to this country. And obviously they come with nothing. And there was a little shout out on Facebook, which I answered, where they just asked for some clothes and shoes. And we packed up some stuff and got my lovely husband to drive it over to the woman who was doing it. And then we've actually got more involved. And my husband went down to the hotel where a lot of people are staying. And he said, and we'd got together some more donations and he helped sort them. And he met some people. And he just said it made him feel really hopeful, and therefore by proxy me hopeful, because he said everyone was just working really hard to help these people who just need some help and hope of their own. And the staff at the hotel, he said, were so lovely. And these lovely people who are coming to live in our country have got food and clothes, and the kids have got some toys and books. So it's hopeful that people can come together.
God, that's so lovely. I agree with both you and him as well. I think there's something really wonderful, as well as it's lovely contributing, there's something really fantastic about witnessing that, seeing people doing that. It's really heartening, I think. And I know that sort of refugees have been particularly vulnerable during COVID, haven't they?
Yeah, totally. I think what was a bit sad, we had to keep the location of the hotel private and quiet because there's been quite a lot of backlash recently, sadly. And I just think that it's nice to see people just doing something positive.
Yeah, definitely. It's lovely to see so many generations. We had a thing that happened here in Deptford during lockdown. There was a fire, unfortunately. Just somebody, you know, had a bit of bad luck with their barbecue that they had on the balcony. I mean, it was a silly thing, but it could have happened to anyone. And lots of people lost pretty much everything. Gosh. And there was a call out locally to replace, and there were so many donations. People were so generous. My friend who is organising it, the Scout Heart, had to just say, please stop, we can't. which is really lovely, actually. So, yeah, there's been lots of great things. And we're going to talk a bit more about that because I know you've discovered lots more things. I wanted to just chat to you a little bit. I hope this didn't seem like a strange talking point to you, Deb, but you've got one of those jobs, I think, and it may not always feel like it to you, but that is in the sort of comes under the headline for me of dream jobs for a lot of people. And I know a lot of the younger people that I teach, it's one of their like, oh my gosh, I'd love to do that job. And so I was sort of interested in you, in your kind of journey as a journalist, and just speak to you about how, you know, was that something you always wanted to be, and what was your journey from little Deb at school to where you are now?
Mouthy Deb. Yes, I've been very lucky. I have probably wanted to be a journalist since I was 13. And I count myself as being very lucky for like knowing what I wanted to do. It gave me massive drive and massive focus, and to the point that I remember being 13 and standing in, we had a careers corridor at school, which basically meant the careers office was there, and there was some like A4 posters on the wall outside it, and I remember looking at them, and the careers teacher came out and was like, oh, do you know where you want to do your work experience next year when you're 14? And I said I wanted to go to the local paper and do my work experience there, and he said, oh, they'll never take it. They never take anyone. And I looked him in the eye, said, they'll take me.
And that's what brilliant.
Amazing confidence. I genuinely don't know where it came from. And guess what? They took me. I did my my work experience. I did it on the Watford Observer. And it was literally the best week of my life. About halfway through, they said, do you want to go off and do your Saturday job? And I was just like, no, I want to stay here forever and rewrite press releases. And it was amazing. And then because I was so focused, it meant that I just, everything I did was driven towards this goal of journalism. And so I sort of did a degree at a university that was had a very well-respected student newspaper, which was the University of East Anglia. Mm-hmm. And a lot of journalists came out of that college, a lot of them were my friends, but other generations too. And then I did a postgrad at City University. And again, I was very lucky. I got a scholarship for that from Cosmopolitan magazine. But I had a massive amount of drive, but I've also had a massive amount of luck. Mm-hmm. And then I did a traineeship on the Daily Express, which is not necessarily people's choice of paper, but actually for me it was a national newspaper, and I was going to get trained in something that I wanted to do. And some amazing journalists there, met some amazing picture editors there, and people working on the picture desk.
that was me, by the way. We're allowed to say that.
Dear listeners, we've known each other for how many years now? 15.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing. And as you know, that there was so much good in that office and people pulling together. And then from then on, yeah, I went to work in magazines. I've worked freelance now, which means I get to choose what I do. I get to work for some universities and some charities, helping them with their writing. But my favourite thing about my job, which is my dream job still, is telling people's stories and giving people a voice that they might not necessarily have, and helping them. Maybe they're trying to create a memory for someone, or someone they've lost, or they're trying to make a change. And I feel I'm so lucky. I meet so many inspiring people through my job, and it's the real people that I really enjoy speaking to. I get to speak to a few celebrities, and I don't enjoy that, I have to admit, as much as the people who are trusting me enough to share with me their lives or a really important thing that happened to them that's often quite emotional. Mm. And they trust me with that, and they let me help tell their story. So it is a great job, but it is obviously getting harder and harder.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. It's really lovely to hear all the time we've known each other. I don't think I've had the opportunity to hear you speak about it so sort of eloquently and beautifully. And I don't think I knew your journey. So it's lovely to hear that. I was interested in, as you said at the end, we have to acknowledge that it's getting harder, as lots of the industries are. Lots of the normal career paths are changing becoming different. And I wondered what advice, if any, you might give to somebody, Deb, who was, you know, really hoping, similar to you, passionate and idealistic about their intentions for journalism, starting out on career. What do they need to be, and what do they need to do? What sort of qualities do they need to have, and how would they best go about it in the current sort of ecosystem?
It's such a great question, because I mean, media, everything, like you said, is going through a change, but media especially has gone through a massive change. So I'm very much a print journalist, but you know, the digital, even the fact these podcasts, there's a lot of digital information out there. I think reading is such an important thing to do. I've done some guest lectures at universities, and when I ask where people get their news from, it's Instagram or Facebook or, you know, Twitter. I think about who you want to write for, and make sure you read them. If you want to write for newspapers, read newspapers. If there's a particular news site that you want to write for, read that, but also read around that. Read other things too. Read competitors, read publications you wouldn't necessarily want to read that you might not agree with. Just see what's out there. I think reading as much as possible is really important. And then also sort of being prepared to start at the bottom is so important as well. A lot of people I meet often are like, oh, I'm just going to, I'd like a column, or I'd like to do this. And whilst it's really great because you can get blogs going and you can, you have, there are platforms now, which they weren't, you know, 20 odd years ago when I started, for you to have your own voice. If you want to work for someone, you need to look at what they need and what you can do for them. And, you know, often work experience, if you can get it, I know that's very controversial. A lot of people can't afford to work for free, but often just kind of maybe shadowing someone, if you can get a week of just finding out how it works, and making those connections and reaching out to people and being curious as well, being curious in other people, being nosy is such a good quality in a journalist, always wanting to know what's going on and thinking how it affects other people and what people want to know as well.
That's brilliant. I love what you said about curiosity particularly as well, because I think curiosity is such a powerful quality to have, definitely for a journalist, but I sort of think kind of as a human being, because it's a real fear buster as well. I think, you know, if you're scared and you approach something with curiosity, or you're apprehensive, I think it can really help you get to somewhere else. So that's brilliant advice. And and with regard to the work experience as well, Deb, I've certainly had younger people that I've taught who've just done little blocks of work experience. So you might not be able to afford to do 6 months or a year, but as you said, you could try and get a week here and there, couldn't you? And
absolutely. I think that's all you sort of really need, just to kind of, and to capitalise on that. And when you're in, and what I meant by sort of starting at the bottom, making people tea. If you're, doesn't matter what position I hold, I always make people tea. It's an opportunity to connect with someone, to do something kind for someone. Mm. Someone making you a cup of tea is so nice. And then it's a way to kind of make that connection, and they'll remember you a bit more. And then you can start a dialogue about maybe if you can help them out somehow and get that experience for yourself. But I would say always when you're in an office, be the helpful person and be the kind person. Yeah. Because it helps you get remembered.
I can remember you making me many a fine cup of tea, even now. So I'm interested, and I know this is kind of a big subject, but I did quite a lot of research, I have done for many years in a sort of informal way, about the connection between the volume, the amount of gloomy news that we tend to consume, and positive mental health. Mm. And, you know, I went to, you know, a talk at Conway Hall, which Martin Lewis did, about sort of his kind of interest in solutions-driven journalism, etc., and became really interested in it. And I wondered, as both a journalist and somebody who is a human being who's a consumer of news, do you think that it's kind of balancing our media diet is important in terms of positive mental health, and how, from your perspective as a journalist, how can we best do that? So we're sort of staying informed without sort of falling into a terrible well of despair.
Absolutely. I mean, I was thinking a lot about this question, actually, because it's always my instinct to like defend the media and, oh, well, you know, and in one way, I think it's very important. It's very easy for people to say, oh, God, you know, this newspaper, that news channel, they're always talking about this negatively or that negatively. But I think what's really important to remember that in this country, we are very privileged to have a free press. Mm-hmm. And how you work with that free press is that you choose what media you consume. And a lot of people don't realise that they're being fed a lot of stuff. I don't know if you've seen the documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma.
Yes, I have.
So it's very interesting in that if you find yourself just sort of reading news via your social media, so via your Facebook, via your Instagram, you know, you're going to be sent down a certain path. If you make sure you're actively choosing what news that you consume, you are then consuming it mindfully. So I guess it's this mindfulness consumption, in that I have a paper of choice. I like to read The Guardian, and I like that a lot. However, I'm fully aware it's very left-leaning and therefore has a really strong political voice and opinion on a lot of people out there. In the same way, if I'm feeling a bit like junk food and I glance at the Mail Online, I know what the Mail Online's playing at. It's the worst for clickbait. I'm aware of that. But and so if you are, because like I said, if you're reading lots of different types of media, you will be able to start seeing the tools and techniques they're using in order to get you to read them again, click on this article, go on to the next article. So you need to think about what it is that you want to know. So, you know, there are websites, you know, the BBC news website, I think it's very trustworthy. I know a lot of people are saying that's too left and liberal at the moment. But actually, what do you want to read? And just be aware that when you read certain media, they are going one way or another. So think about what it is you want to know. If you just want factual stuff, people are clever enough to just kind of put aside all the kind of nonsense that's packaged in, tear off the wrapping paper and just look at the present inside. What are they actually saying? What are the facts? What are people saying? And, you know, the truth is a funny thing in that it can be interpreted many different ways. So you've just got to apply what you know. Don't just take one news source, I suppose, what I'm saying. And especially if it's telling you exactly what you want to hear, that's just as dangerous as something that tells you exactly what you don't want to hear.
Yeah, it's fantastic advice, and it's very active, which I think is incredibly positive. You know, go out and hunt. Don't just wait till someone plonks a plate of food in front of you. And the whole thing about reading widely is fantastic, because as I was listening to you, as I thought, apart from anything else, if you read, I don't know, journalists or publications that you disagree with politically, it's going to sharpen your argument and challenge you in a really useful way, isn't it? Whichever way that is, I think.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's about being open as well, isn't it? It's about being curious, like you were saying earlier. It's that curiosity. It's like, what do other people think that aren't in my echo chamber, that aren't my friends, that don't just, you know, bang their hands on the table and say, yes, absolutely. Mm. And I do think it's that active consumption.
Yeah, it's really great. And it's having the open-mindedness is really important, because it feels that there's a lot of hope in there for me. Because if you go open-mindedly to it, to an article that might be written by somebody who on the surface is very different to you, you might actually learn something. You might even get your mind changed. And in a way, we're all hoping to change each other's minds, to come to some sort of compromise so we can move forward. So it feels like a really just brilliant, brilliant piece of advice. Now, I wanted to just come on to your latest lovely book, Deb, which I've just ordered, which I haven't read yet.
But, I just sent you one.
I really wanted to order it, and I'm really excited. I love it's called The Power of Kindness, which is, say, available in all the usual places. And I just thought, what a fantastic thing to do actually, I'm going to let you describe what it is. That's all right.
I will describe what it is. So basically, it's been really rubbish recently with coronavirus and everyone being locked down and just feeling stressed, and also kind of weird things coming out, people stockpiling, maybe, you know, not helping other people. But actually, when you start to look, there's a lot of kindness everywhere. And what was really great is that my publisher I work with, they said, hey, listen, we want you to put together all these examples of kindness all around the world, maybe, you know, some serious ones, some funny ones, some lighthearted ones, and kind of, you know, and also there's always uplifting quotes and things like that. And we want you to just package it all together in a book. So that's what I did. I got to spend a lovely time just looking up all these stories, and it made me feel so hopeful. And I just thought, people can be so kind, from the tiniest thing, like sharing some wine from a balcony above and pouring it into someone's wine glass and they stuck it out from a balcony.
It's funny, I want to hear some stories. I have to say to you, I was thinking about you yesterday, because on the day that my book came out, I did this thing called 21 I've been doing this thing called 21 Days of Hope. So I was seeking out hopeful stories, and in the mornings it's the first thing I did, and I kind of done it informally, Deb, but not formally. And it made me think of you, because I thought, this really does work in cheering you up, because literally the first thing I do in the morning is I look for a hopeful story. And it made me think of you, and I thought, actually, well, I just wondered if the process of doing that during this very difficult time had a positive effect on your mood.
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I was on a deadline Bender and tell you how that is slightly. I was very hopeful I would meet the deadline. So, no, it did. It was really nice. It did fill me with hope. It also made me, you know, I'm always quite reflective when I'm doing these things. It made me think, how could I help people? How could I change my behaviour as well? Which is what another thing I really hope people get out of it, as well as feeling hopeful and uplifted. I hope they also think, what can I do? Even if it's just a little thing, just one thing to make. Because I believe in that pay it forward mentality.
Yeah, and I agree with you as well. I think actually there's a great power in what you sounds like you've done in telling little stories, because I think when people read them, they can think, I could do that little thing. I could pour a glass of wine from...
Absolutely.
Actually, sorry, did you say someone poured a glass of wine from a balcony to the glass of wine below?
Yeah, I think there was like a street concert or there was a clap for carers, and they'd just moved into this apartment block, and this guy was having a drink and looked down and said hi to his neighbour below who's on her balcony, and he said, do you want a glass of wine? She's like, okay. And you can imagine like kind of the humour and the comedy, but the connection, because what everyone missed was that human connection. Mm. And it just showed that you can connect. It doesn't need to be wine. It could be lemonade, whatever.
Exactly.
But it's that connection of that. And that I think, especially in those very scary anxiety inducing days and weeks, it was very hard to do that. So, you know, there was kind of just little things like that. It didn't have to be much. You know, there was a woman who was a personal trainer, and she would do daily lockdowns from like the top on those steel containers in her street. I think and a bit like a skip with a lid, and then her neighbours would come out and in their driveways join in an exercise class.
The playfulness is really lovely, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I really like your examples of this sort of their kindnesses, but they're also playful and kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that feels, yeah, that feels great. And were they easy to find? Because I guess there were things happening all over the world.
They were actually, and it is international. There was some, you know, there was some kind of bigger stories, like, you know, we talked about Marcus Rashford, the footballer who, you know, threw his weight behind a campaign to get children free school meals during sort of lockdown and, you know, the summer holidays going forward. And if anyone remembers, he, you know, he's credited with changing the government's mind in whether they funded those or not, because he said, look, I was that kid, I was hungry, and we need to look after these people. And, you know, and he was great. His privilege of having his hard won privilege of, you know, having a public persona to do that. But, you know, there were little things about one guy, a kit man for Lincoln City Football Club. He used to wash all the kit, and obviously the football clubs weren't playing. So he offered to collect washing from the local hospital.
Oh,
so NHS workers. And he did their washing for them.
That's such a nice thing to do, because that's kind of quite a yucky job, or it could be.
Well, yeah, and he's just there with the sort of the free time and the ability, and he thought, how can I make a difference? And I think that's really lovely. And, you know, there's some more emotive ones in there. The one that always sticks with me is a woman whose 8-year-old son died. It's a very sad story, in a road traffic accident. But it was about 15 years ago, and every year she would make this pilgrimage to his memorial bench, which was sort of where they used to go on holiday, and because of lockdown she couldn't get the train there and she couldn't do it, so she put a shout out on Facebook if anyone local in the area, if they would mind laying some flowers on the bench for her, because she couldn't do it this year. And someone answered that call out, and then they also sort of shared it, and the bench was covered in flowers.
Oh,
and it sort of makes me well off.
And me, oh my gosh,
you know, in a time when people often can't get food, are worried about people dying, and they've gone and done that for someone.
That's so moving.
Means anything to them, but because it means something to her, it really sort of stuck out for me, that story. So
that's beautiful. What I loved about you doing it, you collecting these stories and bringing this book out, was I think it's really important that there are loads of really great sort of books focusing that. But the reason I thought that yours was really important was because I think it's really important for us to remember what people did during this time, because there's a temptation to for people to remember the fact that people were fighting over toilet rolls or the fact that some people refused to wear their masks, etc. So it feels incredibly important. And so I'm really glad, I'm so grateful that you wrote this book, that you've collected these so that we can read them and say, look what we did, look what we are capable of. And that was all around the world, all different kinds of people. So I'm really looking forward to reading it. It's called The Power of Kindness, Debbie Marco, and I'll make sure there's a link to it in the copy for the website.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I'm just going to say, Bendit, for you, I think you should check out page 127. You may be in the book.
I'm very proud of that. I'm excited. I'll try not to turn to that first, though. I'll read it. I'll read it. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about. So one thing that I found incredibly moving during lockdown and kind of really rose in my consciousness was how many friends of mine on social media were trying to have their sort of community, you know, celebrate Passover or their religious festivals or get together with their community groups, whether they were on their own. I had a few friends that were on their own trying to sort of connect on social media. And it really made me think a lot about the stories that were often told about faith and religion and how they can be a little bit negative. And not all, of course, but what I noticed was, one, how really beautiful it was. And it made me think a lot about how having a faith or having a sort of community of people through your faith or through your belief system actually helps people be hopeful and helps people feel connected. And I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, really. If you think that there's a connection between faith and being able to maintain hope or feel hopeful at difficult times.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think that's sort of the whole point behind any religion, really, isn't it? It's that hope in, you know, in that God is there looking after us and that everything's happening for a reason and that it will get better. And I think faith and religion is a way of making that really tangible. And I know you're asking me this because you know that I'm a practicing Jew.
Yeah.
And we've had, like you said, we had Passover in lockdown, but most recently, in fact, on Monday was the Day of Atonement, which is the most significant day in the Jewish calendar in that we have to atone for our sins. And normally you would spend the day in synagogue and you would be fasting and you would be praying. And actually that was something I did find quite hard this year, not being at the synagogue. Mm. And I have a great community. Then they did a lot on Zoom and they did it on Facebook Live and it was great. And actually I felt really disconnected, which showed me how connected I usually feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I realised how much I missed that connection and how hard it felt not being able to be with that community. Mm. And so I think everyone has their own version of religion in what they believe. Even an agnostic or an atheist has their set of beliefs and their set of principles and their sort of set of rules by which they live and do good.
I suppose it sort of came up for me because I hadn't seen my friend, well, particularly my Jewish friends, actually, were just sort of saying, I'm on my own and I'm trying, and excuse my ignorance, Deb, because I'm just learning about a lot of things to do with Jewish culture. As you know, I'm always occasionally asking you stupid questions. But I saw people like trying to find the right kind of food and being on their own when they used to be in a community. And I found that incredibly moving. And actually, I thought in some ways, it's painful, but it's very lovely that we're aware that we miss things because they're going to come back. And maybe for all of us, you know, people of all faiths and no faiths and every kind, it's good to know what we miss because perhaps we shouldn't take things for granted, some things for granted, or we should just treasure them and treasure each other. So without sounding too mawkish, I quite liked missing some things.
Yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. We're all so overloaded at the moment. You know, I include myself in that. I'm constantly rushing from pillar to post. I fill my weekends with social engagements. My kids have clubs. We're barely in the house. We're running around. And actually, when everything stopped, it was almost a relief. At first, I was panicked, I'm not going to lie. I was like, yeah. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do with all this time? And then I did some gardening. I painted some palettes. I just slowed down and spent some time in the house and thought, wow, actually, my kids weren't rushing around trying to get to this sporting club and that sporting club. And so there was from the absence, I suppose, grew something else, or just needing that space. I think in this society when we're always kind of filling our time, even now because we're all on our phones, there's never that time just to be still.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm missing stuff. And then as you start to add things in gradually, add them back in, you may, hopefully you'll be a bit more selective and you'll think, what is good for me and the people around me, and what can I do without, and what do I need less of, and what do I need more of?
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, obviously everybody was in different circumstances and some very challenging, but I felt hopeful that everyone at least would be able to have a little bit of time to think about those things, exactly as you said, what they need, what they don't need, what they need more of, even if it came out of a negative place, as in I didn't get this and I need it, mm-hmm. to identify what those things were felt really important. And I know there's been lots of talk, as you all know, of, you know, we can get to make the world afresh, and there's a lot of heavy lifting to do, mm. if we want to do that. And it's an enormous question, really, Deb. But I wonder for you, if you could have your way with the future. So let's say if your children, when they're grown up, how would you like, if you were thinking of a sort of utopian, lovely, shining future where, or let's say semi-utopian, where things were pretty much all right, having learnt or perhaps considered things that you have done in the last few weeks, what might that look like for you, the new world?
Oh, that's massive, isn't
it? I know.
I mean, it's interesting. It's really cheesy, but it is kindness. And yeah. I can't get away from that, because that kindness and that connection, because we miss the connection so much, but I think everyone's so busy trying to accumulate stuff and what they can sort of do for themselves, and it's kind of very inward looking. And I just think that looking to someone else, because the thing I mentioned at the beginning about us helping with this mm-hmm. project, mm-hmm. I was messaging someone on Facebook who I've never met, and we were giddy with, like, I'd gone to Sainsbury's and bought some extra stuff, and I was giddy with it, and she was giddy with it, and we were like, this feels so good. It was like a bigger high than anything.
Yes.
But we acknowledge that, you know, we're very privileged to be in the position to help some, you know, people like that. And also how it was kind of selfish. We were like, we've done this good thing, but we're getting so much from it.
Yeah.
And we're sort of, and then we were like, we need to calm down. We need to do more good things. And I know you get this, because I've always looked to you, and I don't want you to be embarrassed by this. I often look to you and think of you as an example of someone who does something kind whenever they can. Because I remember when you started your...
Yes, I was with you.
You were.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I carry with me. It was so impactful on my life, because often I feel awkward, and often I'm in a situation where I see someone who's homeless, I see someone who's asking for money, and I feel awkward and I don't know what to do. And I know if I were you, you would know what to do and it would be the right thing. And that sounds very silly, because I'm a confident grown-up person. And I just think that I would like people to know what to do more, and to reach out, and for it to be more innate, and just to think, I can see someone who needs my help and I can give it to them. And it doesn't have to be massive. It could just be a kind word, it could just be if I've got some change, it could just be a coffee, yeah. It could be whatever it is. And I think,
well, it's really kind of you to say that. I mean, I often think, just I'm not quite sure what to do there in that situation. But I 100%, well, one thing I think it's really fantastic what you said about the experience of the feeling that you and your friend got, because I think sometimes, Deb, there's a bit of a self-care's over here and being kind out in the world is over there. Well, and actually, they can and do coexist, because, you know, you get this massive oxytocin, serotonin, all the feel-good hormones buzz, yep, as you and your friend experience. So it is a form of self-care. So it's definitely a fantastically rewarding thing to do, like an immediate karmic reward. So I think it's really great you said that. But again, also, I absolutely agree with the little thing. The little thing also makes it possible. If you're just like, oh, actually, haven't got any change to give that person today, but I'm going to smile and ask them if they're okay.
Yeah. You know. But even that kind of connecting with someone on a bus or on a train, if we ever, you know, get to use them freely again, you know, giving up something as simple as giving up your seat to someone, even if they're not pregnant or old, just letting, you know, just doing something for someone, holding a door for someone or saying good morning. Sometimes I go on a run and someone says good morning to me. It lifts my spirit to be seen and to have that kindness of that connection. Yeah. Because I think it's really important that you never know what anyone else is going through. And it's so easy to get across.
Yes, so easy. And I think I agree. I feel like perhaps the idea of a utopia is really hard to think about. I think it's partly, well, it's for many reasons. But I think perhaps, I haven't really thought it before, but maybe you're right. Maybe it's as simple as if kindness becomes normal. It's just every day. If people lost their fear of connecting with each other, felt less anxious around that, maybe that would take us where we want to go.
I think it would. And I think that people sort of have to look within themselves as well, because there's lots of kind of, people are quite angry at the moment as well, and I've sort of noticed this, and there's lots of kind of, they're directing their anxiety and their uncertainty towards sort of other groups. And I did sort of, so I think as well as kind of being kind to other people, being kind to yourself, also acknowledging your place in the world and the space that you take up. And there was this great quote that whenever I find myself getting cross, it's like, you're not stuck in traffic, you are the traffic. And I find that quite levelling in a way, and which I find hopeful. But in that, you've got to remember that don't be cross at other people, because you're part of this. Like, you're not part of the problem, but if you're part of the problem, you're also part of the solution.
Yeah.
So you are the traffic. And if you want that traffic to move more freely or change direction, you're the traffic. You can do something about that.
Yeah. It's empowering as well, isn't it, to have that thought. And I do wonder whether it kind of circles back a little bit to the news in a way, I suppose. I'm not blaming the news or journalists for this, but I was thinking about how sometimes I think that anger, which I've noticed as well, Deb, is from fear, and that fear's fed by, you know, people scrolling through their social media feeds and seeing the same terrible headline or piece of awfulness about a million times, kind of being beaten up by the same negative video. So I do think as well, if it doesn't sound too harsh, that it's probably our individual responsibility to say, oh, I'm cross because I'm scared, and what I'm scared of is this.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's hard for people to recognise that. They're cross because they're cross, and they're, like, in their minds, and they're cross because they're right. There's all these, like, local groups. The one around us really hates cyclists. It's quite funny. We sort of laugh about it a bit. They really hate cyclists. I don't know why. They're not polluting the planet. I've never been hit by a cyclist. It's very rare for a cyclist to knock over someone and kill them. You know, it's happened, I know. But they're very cross about it where I live. And I don't know what they're cross, what they're really, I want to go ask them, what's really bothering you? Stop thinking about the cyclist.
And maybe
what's really going on?
We do need to ask each other more. I got really angry yesterday, and it's not really like me, and it wasn't directed in any particular direction, but I kind of felt like the Hulk. And I thought, why am I so angry? And I thought, I'm sort of scared of what's going to happen next and whether London's going to go into lockdown. And actually, once I'd worked out that I was angry because I was scared and what I was specifically scared of, it helped me then to say, I just kind of try to find out a bit instead of just being really scared and angry. And so it made me just think about that, the sort of connection. And I think you have to be, like you were saying earlier, really careful about how you interact with social media if you're feeling cross or you're feeling worried.
And you should always think about, would I say this to anyone's face? I think people are a lot braver on a keyboard than they are, you know, when you talk to someone and you can see the hurt and you can see, you know, the sort of pain behind them, you know, and I just would like people to sort of act with kindness, I suppose.
I was going to ask you, and maybe we could think between us for I was going to say to you before we part company for a little while, what would be a good one thing that any of us could do right now in the next 24 hours, however small, to get to a sort of brighter future? And I was just thinking, because you said that about social media, and I was wondering if there's any way of sort of reclaiming that space for kindness.
On the social media. Switch it off. I don't know this is about hope. I'm not sure, is the honest answer. Like, as in, it was very hopeful that I connected through Facebook. I think it's just, like you said, maybe it's just not engaging with the negativity.
And
having big social media breaks and thinking, if I could see this person, would I say these words to them? And if I knew what they were hurting. I think, you know, I shared a story with you about someone being unkind to me and my kids when we were down, and it upset me so much, and it took me weeks to let go of it. And I had to keep saying to my, even though I was really cross, I had to keep saying to my kids, oh, I think they're very scared. I think she's very scared, and I think she's, you know, nervous, and it's coming out as anger, in, you know, similar to what you said. But it took me a long time, and I mentally wrote, she wrote something about me and my children on a social group.
Oh, no.
I know. And she kind of didn't tell the whole truth either. She twisted it slightly to fit her narrative. And I wrote so many replies in my head.
Yeah.
And I'm good at doing that. I'm a writer. That's what I do. I knew I could utterly just destroy what she'd said.
Yeah.
And it would be embarrassing for her. I could get my revenge. I could do all those things.
Yeah.
I wrote it and I wrote it. I wrote it all in my head. And I just didn't do it. And that was kind of my act of kindness almost.
Yes.
Not do it. And that sounds really like I was like, I couldn't stop feeling the way I was feeling, but I didn't act on it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's all we can hope for.
Yeah.
You don't have to not feel that way. You don't have to have that response. Like, you are the least angry person I know and the most hopeful, but you still felt anger, and that's okay, because we're human beings and it's part of our emotional makeup.
Yeah.
But maybe it's not acting on that anger is the first step towards kindness.
Yeah, it's really great. And I think it's interesting hearing you all the things you've said about kindness, and it makes me think, actually, maybe it's okay to say this isn't a perfect arena for transforming the world into a future utopia through kindness, and maybe the sort of out there as much as you can is, so it's like, you know, smiling at your neighbour, like you said, helping someone, it's kind of that stuff. And I think there's great power as well in saying, I'm cross and I'm going to write this email, but I'm not going to send it.
Write the email, just don't send it. And don't put someone's email address in before you write it. It's my top tip, because it could accidentally get sent. But I think so maybe it's just those baby steps. Maybe it's just not confronting people, thinking it, saying it privately, but not saying it to them. Like, stop adding fuel to that fire. Or even just thinking, I won't say this horrid thing. I'll say something kind instead, even though I don't quite mean it. And then out of that, maybe there's a kind response, and then it builds, it grows. It is a little seed. I know you know.
No, you're absolutely right. It's tiny footsteps, really, isn't it? I was hearing, my friend works on the fish counter in Tesco's near here, and I'd, on the morning, it was a couple of days ago, Deb, I saw this thing about how shopkeepers, everyone's being mean to them, or some people are being mean to them. And I spoke to my friend, and she said, oh, yeah, people are getting... like really taking out their frustration on shop workers because I guess they feel they can or something. And it's, as you know, it's World Kindness Day, November the 13th. So I thought it'd be really cute to get, I'm telling you this because you and your kids might want to do it. I thought I'm going to get try and get the school opposite to get the kids to write sort of little kind messages or little nice messages to shop workers. And then I'm going to get the teachers to drop them off and then try and take them up to Tesco's. I don't know if you fancy doing that.
I'm writing it down. I'm going to email the head teacher because, as you know, there's a Sainsbury's opposite our school.
And actually, it's not a part, because I was thinking I'm not having to do much then. The teachers are doing it, the kids doing it. I'm just kind of collecting the package. But, and that's a little thing, but hopefully that might be. What do you think? Do you think that's a good idea?
I like it, especially if they are coming under sort of attack as well. I think what's interesting about that, the thing that sprang to my mind is that these people who are saying the unkind things and take they could like the shop workers could be the first person they've seen that day or the only person they're going to talk to and just feeling
friend said she said sometimes it's been hard, she said, but other times she said she can just see that somebody's also suffering and they're at a breaking point, and that doesn't mean that she doesn't that she approves of their rudeness, but there's a lot going on, isn't there? So
And I still don't think it's right as well. I think I'd really like I don't think people ever should be unkind because you don't know what the other person's going through or how wounded they could be by what you've said or what you've done.
No.
So I think that's important too. And I also think, you know, the power of apology, if you can go back and say, you know, I'm sorry I said this or I was brusque or whatever it was. You know, there's lots of stories actually in my book that I liked about people paying for other people's shopping and just kind of just doing that. There's a lot of kindness to be found.
Yeah, there is.
In shops as well. And
I
think that we should be grateful because those are key workers that work there.
No, they are, and they're really on the front line. And you're right, there is lots of kindness as well, I guess. Right now, because we're still in a sticky bit, is to just notice if particular people are having a hard time, and if you can do a little bit. So
absolutely, I think one thing that gave me hope about everything that's been happening was this kind of reorganisation of key workers in a way.
Yeah,
of who was useful and who was important, and who was actually quite disposable when it really came down to it. I don't mean disposable, that's a bit of a harsh word, but when everything locked down and the people were the carers, the shop workers, the, you know, all the, like, the doctors and the nurses, obviously.
The refuge collectors.
Exactly.
And the posties, sorry, it was all, yeah, I was just thinking.
Exactly, post people and delivery people, milkmen and women.
Yeah.
Just anybody whose job was to help someone and to connect with someone, they counted. And anyone who just sat in an office, not connecting with other people and not helping other people in their daily lives.
No. They were
important.
It's the sort of nuts and bolts of what actually keeps the world going was really revealed to us, wasn't it? Some really sweet things happened here, Deb. So people on my little stretch of the road that I live on, there was about 3 or 4 houses that kept leaving out biscuits for the refuge collectors.
Oh, nice.
It was really cute. You could just see little packets of Maryland cookies or whatever balanced on there. It was really nice.
And then some really overweight refuge collectors coming down.
And my sister, who is a nurse, she was saying that people were so generous in terms of bringing them food. She was like, I think I've put on half a stone and now I've got to go on a diet because I kept getting triple cooked chips and amazing vegan pizzas and all these ice creams being brought to them. So, yeah.
That's so funny. That's so nice. So I think people were looking for ways of, you know, really trying to sort of pay it forward and help.
Yeah.
But, I really liked that. I liked how it revealed who counted.
Yeah. And when you were researching your book, was that sort of something that kind of got uncovered?
Oh, definitely. There was even silly stuff like like a postman who wore fancy dress every single day, like a different outfit every single morning.
Oh, that is so brilliant.
Who were stuck at home. That was the highlight of their day, to see what outfit that they were going to be wearing. And, you know, there was a milkman who, you know, checked up on his elderly clients and started delivering more than just milk and was sort of doing, you know, extra things. And a supermarket manager who spotted someone who was in a bit of need of help and went round and fixed the doorbell on their house and, you know, just did some, there was some great stuff there. And it was the people who are sometimes overlooked and, can I say, even like looked down upon in society. And you'd think, oh, you know, that's not a great job to empty someone's bins. But suddenly that became, you know, there was a time when we thought the bins weren't going to be emptied. And it sounds like a small thing, but it's
massive.
Actually, it's massive.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the people working in hospitals, obviously, I think they were incredibly brave as well.
It goes back to that sort of taking things for granted thing. I without sounding too mawkish, I was really grateful that I was made super aware of what I was taking for granted, and I stopped taking it for granted. And that was, you know, being able to connect with particular communities, really not taking for granted people that work in the shop or the post office, etc. I was glad of that.
Yeah.
I was glad to be... And I was glad to be really reminded of how flipping lucky I am.
Yeah, absolutely. But even the fact that you couldn't get food. We live in a world of so much... Well, we live in a country of plenty.
Yeah.
And I know that some people do struggle for food, and I'm lucky not to be one of those. But if I want some food, I will go to a shop and buy it. Oh. I can do that. Oh. And that was equal parts frightening and also... A real stock take, like you say, on what was important and how much we had.
Yeah.
And it made me really think of people who didn't have as much as we have.
Yeah.
And, you know, who maybe didn't have enough space in our homes, who may be living in unhealthy relationships.
Yeah.
And I found that quite stressful, because I thought, well, if I start thinking about all that,
yeah,
that's quite scary. But it did make me push to focus on what I could do,
yes,
and to appreciate what I had as well. So
yeah.
It wasn't all bad, but
yeah. It's important, isn't it, to recognise that you can't actually go around you can't fix everything, but you can fix something a bit.
Yeah. I think that's great. That's quite a big thing to get your head around, though.
Yeah.
I know sort of been getting your head around that for a while.
Yeah.
But it's like when you start thinking about things, it can be easy to feel hopeless and say, well, I can't stop this poverty, I can't stop any sort of abusive relationships, I can't change it, so what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really important that you don't feel that way, and that mm-hmm. you do think, well, what can I change? What little difference can I make?
Yeah, that's for me genuinely why hope and kindness are really connected, because you have to, or you don't have to, but it helps if you believe that what you're doing can make a positive change or difference to someone, because it helps just with the energy to do it, doesn't it? It just helps with the impetus. So they're very intertwined for me.
Definitely.
I can't wait to read your book.
Oh, I hope you like it.
I'm really looking forward to it.
I think you will like it, knowing you. It'll give you a little...
Yeah.
You'll like this one. This is... I'm just flicking through it now. There was this guy in... Bristol, and he every day he made like 50 tiny flags and put little things on them saying things like be kind to yourself or you've got cute elbows, and he just would cycle around and put them in places.
That's
around.
So nice.
How pretty. Can you imagine finding a little flag?
Yeah, I like the wit of that as well.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed all the stories you've said. There's quite a lot of playfulness in there, which feels really lovely. And feels like another thing that a lot of people discovered or rediscovered for themselves in this strange time was a kind of creative playfulness.
Yeah, because I think people need that.
Yeah.
When everything's a bit crappy, you need to get your sense of humour, and you need that sense of sort of fun and play, because things are kind of bleak, but also, they will get better. Things will get better. And like you said, hopefully out of this, we can have a different perspective on our lives and our world, and see what we can do to make it better. I think it's going to be a really tough journey. I think financially, economically, we're in for the long haul, and I think it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
But I think out of that does come a lot of goodness and a lot of kindness.
Me too. And again, I think that's why your book's important, because it's really important that on the darker days, if you like, on the cloudier days, we remember what we can do. The good stuff we can do. Deb, thank you so much. I've taken up more time than you had, and I really appreciate your time.
You.
Oh, so nice to hear your voice. And I'll put all the details for your book on the copy for the podcast and at the end. And maybe we'll both do that school's shop workers letter thing.
Yes, you'll inspire me as you do always.
And you, me, my lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Bye. Bye. Debbie Marco's book is called The Power of Kindness, and you can get it in all the usual places. It's got lots of incredible stories of kindness and playfulness and fun and community and connection from all around the world. That happened during lockdown, and it's a really useful and beautiful record of that time. Thank you so much for spending time with us, and look forward to spending a little bit more time with you in a week. Bye.